Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. We're headed to Boca Chica, Texas, the home of SpaceX, looking for the next Starship Super Heavy launch. At the same time, there's word about the National Labor Relations Board. That doesn't sound very rocket-friendly, Bob. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Nope, it's not rocket-friendly at all. The NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, has a bunch of different cases. It's suing SpaceX for various labor violations. And one of those cases actually expressly involves troublemakers at SpaceX that wrote a letter to the press complaining about SpaceX's operations in a way that was violating its work agreements with the employees. SpaceX terminated those people. So they then went to the NLRB, and that put forth a case against SpaceX. SpaceX, though, did not immediately respond to the specifics of the cases. Instead, SpaceX sued the NLRB and stating its existence violates the Constitution. It prevents SpaceX from getting a jury trial. The nature in which NLRB board members and judges are cannot be removed violates the Constitution as well. This is a argument that SpaceX is not alone at. Amazon, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's have recently asserted similar claims against the NLRB. Now, a lot of people didn't take that SpaceX's argument very seriously initially, but in one of the cases against SpaceX, the Federal Fifth Court of Appeals suspended the case so that the larger legal issue of the existence of the NLRB could be addressed. And so what the NLRB now has done is it suspended its other case against SpaceX so that, once again, the larger legal issues of the NLRB can be addressed in court. What this means on a much it's a much greater issue than just simply the lawfare against SpaceX that's been going on since the Biden administration took over. This now becomes an issue of whether or not the National Labor Relations Board is even legal, and it's going to be decided in the court. And it does appear that maybe SpaceX has a valid case. If that's the case, it's going to really change labor relations in the United States, because the unions have had the NLRB as a representative for many, many decades, and that might go away now.
And the first case, it's dismissed or coming back?
No, it's all suspended. Nothing. What's going to happen is they're now going to focus on the larger legal issues, get those settled. If they can settle in favor of SpaceX, those cases then go away. You're absolutely right. But if they rule the NLRB is legal and constitutional, then those cases will be renewed at that point.
We go to a 90-pound piece of debris. Maybe. This is not totally confirmed, but it looks good. Falling on a Canadian farm. And 90 pounds looks dangerous, Bob. Was it?
Who knows? To be honest, it may be. What happened is that a Dragon cargo capsule returned to Earth, it landed, splashed down, was recovered, but it has sections of it that do not come back to Earth. It's got a service module, and then attached to the back of the service module is something called the trunk. It's an area, it's like a tube, essentially, where they store material cargo that they don't need to put in pressurized container, but they can bring up to the station and then remove. So it came down, part of the trunk broke off, and this is stuff they allow to burn up in the atmosphere, but it appears that a 90-pound piece did not burn up. It crashed in a Canadian farm sometime in February, but that was winter, and so no one was doing any work, and snow fell and covered it. But then come around late April, the farmer, things start to melt, the snow starts to go away. He gets out in his field and distracted to begin work, and lo and behold, he finds this 90-pound piece of burned debris on his farm. And after some analysis, they decided this is likely the trunk section of the Dragon's cargo craft that came back to Earth in February. Now, what's significant about this to me is that for decades, everyone has assumed that when you get a piece of spacecraft that's like 10 tons or less, pretty much, it's going to burn up in the atmosphere when it comes back. It's just small enough that the heat of the atmosphere will vaporize it, and you don't have to worry about it hitting the ground. Larger pieces, you want to have them come out down over the ocean. And as a general rule, you want to try to bring things down over the ocean as a rule. But when smaller pieces, you don't have to worry so much. But recent history is now telling us that these smaller spacecraft might have sections that could reach the ground, such as this 90-pound piece, which means that I think there's got to be a major rethinking of how objects are deorbited, a major rethinking. It's much more complicated than they thought, John. And so that's the issue that this raises. Companies and countries are liable for damage, and you don't want pieces hitting the ground where they could maybe hit property or people.
Good news. The Dream Chaser, which is the best name in 20 years, to my opinion, for a space vehicle. The Dream Chaser, which has gone through many pauses and then advances, is getting ready to take its place as a transportation system to and from ISS. What is Dream Chaser, Bob, and why are we waiting for it?
Dream Chaser is a concept by a company called Sierra Space. It's the name, the fleet name for a fleet of vehicles they want to create that can be mini shuttles, cargo vehicles, and maybe manned vehicles to go up and down to the ISS. They're not space shuttles. They're small. They're like kind of like a larger version of the X-37B. They are lifting body, which means they use the atmosphere and the shape of their of the spacecraft to come back to Earth and then land on a runway. And they are reusable. And so Sierra Space's first Dream Chaser is called Tenacity. It is now completed all in ground testing prior to launch in an Ohio facility, and they've now shipped it. It has arrived at Cape Canaveral, where it is going to go through final testing and then stacking on top of ULA's Vulcan rocket. It will be the second launch of Vulcan rocket, and they're hoping to do this before sometime this fall. If that mission goes successful, Tenacity will go up, spend about 45 days at ISS. It'll deliver a little less than 8,000 pounds of cargo. While it's there, they will prove out its rendezvous and docking capabilities, its maneuverability, its whole operation, and then it'll come back to Earth and land on a runway, be checked out, and possibly be able to fly up to seven more times to ISS, at least seven more times. That's the plan. If this goes well, Sierra Space will hopefully build more of these to create a fleet, including possibly future ones that will be manned. And that'll give them another, they'll give us another option for getting people to and from ISS.
And that's the good news, because heretofore we've been entirely relying on Dragon, which is a good capsule and a good operation. But we've been waiting for number two. We thought it was going to be Blue Origin. No, it's going to be Starliner. But, and yet, so with the back,
it's important, John, to make a distinction here. Starliner and Dragon man capsules don't really bring a lot of cargo back to Earth. They bring people back. Similarly, Soyuz capsules bring people back. They can't really bring a lot of cargo. They can bring some, but not a lot, because the people come first. The Progress freighters the Russians have doesn't return to Earth. It burns up in the atmosphere, so you can't bring cargo back from that. The Cygnus cargo capsule burns up in the atmosphere. You can't bring cargo back from that. So once the shuttle went away, we're pretty much been confined to Dragon cargo capsules to get any kind of cargo back from ISS. And the thing about Tenacity, the Dream Chaser mini shuttle, is that it will be able to bring cargo back from ISS. Not, you know, it's designed for cargo. And that's a significant thing. We need to be able to get cargo back. When you do an experiment in space, you often want to bring this experiment back to Earth to analyze, to look at it, to see what the results are. So this is a major deal. This will give us another way, an additional way to bring cargo back from ISS. For example, I'll give you an example. They had a space suit issues a few years ago, and they needed to get the spacesuit back to the ground to analyze why the American spacesuit was giving problems. Well, it was difficult because the only thing they could use was Dragon. It just took a long time to get the thing back. This will improve that situation.
All right. Now, Bob, here's a puzzle that it presents itself all the time, and I meant to ask you about this earlier. The reusable boosters that SpaceX has perfected, that, as I remember you teaching me, comes from the NASA ideas somewhere in the middle of the 20th century. Is that correct?
No.
Where did it come from?
No. The reusable boosters that SpaceX does is a totally SpaceX idea, because for decades, engineers were saying it was completely impractical and, in fact, impossible to vertically land a first stage and then be able to reuse it. So Elon Musk said, no, we're going to design it. We're going to figure it out, and we're going to make it work. Everyone had said this was never going to work. And so this is totally a SpaceX idea. It doesn't come from anything out of NASA. NASA developed the idea of reusability with the space shuttle, and their concept there was to use something that could come back and land like an airplane on a runway, but not to reuse the first stages as a vertical landing
system. And so the reason I ask is because Ariane 6, the first of Ariane 6, is about to launch, and it imitates the NASA style of one use, you throw it away, correct?
I don't want to put the blame totally on NASA. In fact, it isn't really NASA. Rocket companies worldwide, government and until SpaceX, everything was expendable. The rocket would launch once, you'd throw it away, because they all said it was impossible to make a reusable rocket. So when SpaceX came up in the previous decade with the Falcon usable, Europe decided it needed to replace its Ariane 5 rocket. So it came up with the Ariane 6, and it made some changes to try to make it less expensive and more competitive. One of the things they did is, instead of having it a government-owned and operated thing, it would be owned and operated by Ariane Group, which is a private consortium. It would be owned privately and run privately. that wasn't entirely and true. It's still government interference is very deep into this Ariane 6 rocket. And one of the reasons that interference is, they said, no, you won't try to make it reusable. So the Ariane 6 is about 4 years behind schedule, but the first launch of the Ariane 6 is about to happen. And the European Space Agency has now announced that they've narrowed the launch date to the first 2 weeks in July. Up until now, they've been saying it would happen sometime in a six-week period from the end of June through early August. Well, they now say they're targeting the first 2 weeks in July, and by early June, they'll give us an exact date. The rocket is just about ready to do its first full dress rehearsal countdown, which will include fueling it as if it was going to launch. Once they've done that, they'll be ready to start launching. They have lots of contracts for the Ariane 6, so they'll be launching this for the next few years. Those contracts, though, are almost all from Amazon and the Kuiper constellation. Once they've done those few launches, Europe will probably be abandoning this rocket because it's just too expensive.
Another first is a manned Starliner. Delay, delay, delay. What is the delay this time, Bob?
This is just an extra 4 days of delay. Last week, they thought they would launch on May 20th. Late in the week, they decided to give it an extra 4 days. So the scheduled launch date now is the 25th of May. And that's just to give them 4 extra days for the Boeing team engineers to really assess the small helium leak that they detected last week in attitude thrusters in the spacecraft service module. It's the first flight of this manned capsule with people on board, so I can understand them wanting being extra cautious and make sure everything is right, John.
And we turn to the Air Force to come up with a solution for what appears to be resistance by the culture in Hawaii to telescopes. Is there more hope for this than for the Mauna Kea, Bob?
The distinction here is interesting. There are several peaks in Hawaii on different islands that have telescopes. The one that's most well known is Mauna Kea on the Big Island. That's where all the astronomy telescopes are. And the big story that we're all aware of over the last decade is the protests that literally shut down construction of the 30-meter telescope. If that telescope had been built as planned, it would already be looking at the heavens, working for several years now. It was supposed to start construction in 15 and be operating by 20. But protesters blocked it. And basically, they've killed it. I don't think that the 30-meter telescope will ever be built at this point. And that's on Mauna Kea. But there's another telescope on peak on Maui, another island, that has a lot of Air Force telescopes, and I think one solar telescope as well. And the Air Force's telescopes on that peak are used mostly to track objects in space, from satellites to spacecrafts to ISS to space junk. And we're talking about sometimes things as small as screws. They can track everything. And so the Air Force is now proposing to add seven more telescopes to the top of this peak on Maui because they say the number of objects in space is growing exponentially, and they've got to keep track of all this stuff. Some of it's for national security. Some of it's just simply space junk issues and for commercial operations that help people do the things we like having done, like having internet and GPS and weather reports. But to do that, they've got to get approval from the local communities, and they're now holding meetings in local communities in Hawaii, where it appears they're facing great opposition to this. There's a lot of people in Hawaii who say these mountains are sacred, and we don't want more telescopes there. So I don't know what's going to happen, John. The Air Force will probably want to proceed, but I would not be at all surprised if we start to see protests trying to physically block this construction as well. It's not a good thing, but that's where we stand right now.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.